This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, grievers. Hello, grief-curious people. And hello to the folk who tune in just because they love our catchy little theme song. This is your boy, Michael Cruz Kane, and this is another episode of A Good Cry. Now, let me remind you before we even get started to please subscribe, to please rate us 5 stars, to please review us with a 5-star quality review. Take the stars of 5 and transform them into words that are 5-star worthy. Why don't you? That way it's easier for people to find us. If they find us, they can listen to us. And if they listen to us, we can begin the grief industrial complex that I hope to one day eventually achieve. Also, let me please thank everyone who reached out and people who've already bought tickets to my show in Brooklyn at Union Hall on November 7th at 8 p.m. The beautiful and talented Pat Regan will be opening for me. Hope you say hi afterwards. I hope we hang and do like one of those cool handshakes that's like this and then one of these. And then you do kind of one of these with your hands and then something like that. Okay, grief stuff. This week, I'm thinking about the word bereaved. Ugh, I hate it. It's so tidy. Grief shouldn't be able to be encapsulated in such a tidy little word, the bereaved. I also don't like the way it sounds. I think it's the R in the middle. It's sloppy. But then also the B at the beginning and the D at the end makes it feel like it's neat. So it's messy and it's neat, which now that I think about it, I kind of do love in the end, the paradox of that. What if we just took the R out and then it would be beaved? No, I'm wrong. Bereaved is good. They did the best they could. I now endorse bereaved. I retract my former criticisms. All right, welcome to episode 6 of A Good Cry. Did I say that already? I'm not sure. But it's only kind of episode 6, if I'm being honest. This episode you're about to listen to was actually our original pilot that we recorded way back in the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. He said, hoping that there will be no more heights. And I'm sharing with you basically in its entirety because I had such a good time recording it. And I think it is, dare I say it, a great episode. It's with my pal, Rachel Winitsky, who at the time was a writer for Jimmy Fallon. And she's one of the funniest people going. You can check out tons of stuff she's done online. She has very funny character videos on her Twitter. And she's also got a musical group called Friends Who Folk. She's also just written a series of books. I mean, the woman is prolific and everything she makes is wonderful. She's also a griever. We talk about all kinds of stuff, but one bit that stuck with me big time is a card that she got from her aunt. And I'm not going to spoil it for you because it's hilarious, but I do want to express some sympathy for people who are buying the sympathy cards. Man, it is hard to nail that because that is not an easy task. And there's very little advice on how to do it better. My tip, sorry for your loss. It's classic. It's boring. It's solid. It's the perfect message for a card. We're not shooting for originality here. The weird card that you pick out is gonna be the thing that everyone secretly laughs at and not in the good way after it's all over. All that being said, this is episode 6, parentheses kind of A Good Cry. I hope it helps. My first guest is Rachel Winitsky. She's a great writer. She's a fantastic live performer. If you remember live performance, that was something. Please give it up wherever you're listening to this for Rachel. Is that how you introduce people on podcasts, Rachel? Did that make sense?
I thought that sounded really good.
I guess there wasn't like, there's no give it up. There's no one to give it up.
Give it up, everyone. Give it up at home.
Yay, give it up at home.
I like that it's like, she's a writer, a performer, and she has grieved.
Yes, she has felt the bottomless pit of sadness. I'd love to get us just kicked off with anything good. Did you do anything good today? I know it's quarantine time. It's COVID time. I don't know when this will be released, but that's what's happening now.
Yeah, it's
did you do anything good? or see anything good?
You know, I finished watching Devs.
Ooh, wait, is Devs over?
Or not finished. There's one more episode, but I caught up.
Obsessed with Devs.
It's really, it's a wild show. I really like it. Are you caught up as well?
I think I'm caught up. One of my, I'm friendly with, big time brag, Jin Ha. I can't remember his character's name, but you know what I'm talking about on the show?
Yeah, I do. Wow, that's a big brag.
Yeah, sorry. Jin, I hope you're listening. I love the show. I think it's so like sophisticated and provocative. And yeah. Now I wonder, are people who listen to this going to want to know specifically every detail of the plot? And I guess what? You just gotta listen, watch it.
Unless, I mean, this is only the first episode of your podcast. So like you could swerve right now and this could be a Devs podcast.
This is a Devs recap podcast as of this moment.
There's literally no reason why you can't do that. I don't think.
It is a great show.
It's really fun.
You got your Nick Offerman, Alison Pill. You don't expect Nick Offerman just off the jump. You're like, what's he doing here?
You expect Alison Pill, yes. But you don't expect her to be that character.
Yeah, it's very serious. Okay, well, anyway.
Well, that's Devs.
Something good that happened to me is we've been biking.
Oh, okay.
Wife and kids go out, take a little bike ride. My daughter just picked it up.
Congrats.
So now we're on the bike all the time. Thank you. And we're biking just like straight down into an industrial wasteland where mm-hmm. if we died, no one would ever find us.
We'd just
be erased from humanity.
I love that.
But when we go that way, we feel like maybe we don't have to wear the masks. Like we feel like we're away from society, so it's okay.
Right. You're just near industrial waste.
Yeah, exactly.
Normal.
Right.
Normal waste.
Yes, the toxic fumes will kill us, but everybody else will. No one will suffer from whatever illnesses we may.
You're not putting anyone in danger. That's
you get it.
Yeah, I get it.
Rachel, you get it.
I think I get it. Wow, that sounds really fun. I wish I had a bike.
You don't have. You could do the city bike. That's what we do. We don't have a bike.
Oh, do you sanitize?
Yeah, I wipe the bejesus out of those handles. I'm really wiping them, and then I don't touch anything, and then I come upstairs and I wash the ever loving shit out of my hands.
I feel like it's this weird moment of like I go to the grocery store and I get back and I'm like, do I burn my clothes? Like,
yes.
Do I really will like get back and like strip naked and like throw everything in the wash and get in the shower, burn off all my skin? Like I feel like I don't know how much is too much or like or if I'm not even doing enough.
I do exactly the same thing as you. I get home. I, too, have a washing machine. Brag.
Yeah. Oh, we both have washing machines.
Sorry. This is a podcast exclusively for rich people.
We are the elite.
Yeah, that's right. We are the people who are going to be first to die in the revolution that follows. but yeah, I take everything off directly in the wash and then I go directly to the shower. My wife is a nurse, so she's like, when she leaves work, she changes clothes before she gets in her car, then gets out of her car, and then changes her clothes again.
Wow. I've wondered how people who like work in hospitals are dealing with it, because I'm like, I basically want to do what you're doing. And that is really good to know.
Yeah. And then she gets inside and we dip her in gasoline, light her on fire.
Right. Light her on fire. You have to.
Then she can do whatever she wants.
And then you have to prestige yourself.
Wait, isn't prestige. That, okay. Yes. The prestige. Movie where we get it. We're going to have this podcast is going to come with anyone who listens will come with a little brochure that we'll mail to their house so they know what Devs and the Prestige are.
Yeah.
Good so far.
My brain is like not, my brain is not in a place to be having any sort of conversations right now.
Yes, I understand that. I don't talk to humans except for my family and we've, like our level of discourse has degraded completely down to just like grunts and like, yes. Shut up. And that's pretty much how we communicate.
Absolutely. And like making up songs about things. I can like pick up a can of beans and be like, beans, 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 it's beans time. And it's like, and then I'll do it. And then I'll have a moment of like, well, I did that.
That's over now.
And that is something that happened.
We do that. I'm a big like human jukebox where I will suddenly be talking about, I mean, singing about whatever I touch. Okay. Listen, we're 6 minutes in. We haven't even talked. No, people don't know what this is about. So
people want to hear about sad stuff. Come on, give the people what they want.
What people want to hear is the sad shit. This is time for sad times. Rachel, do you have, I know that you do or you wouldn't be here. Is there someone in your life that you've lost that we can talk about on this podcast?
Yes. Yeah. What if I was like, no, I came here to make fun of you. yeah. Yes. So my dad died when I was in college, when I was 19. And that's my grief.
Okay. Tune in next week. Well, that straight up sucks, I assume.
Yeah, it was bad.
What did your dad die of?
So it was this really weird, freaky thing where he didn't feel well. It was like a backache. I think it started as he like went to the hospital. They were like, you're fine. Go home. He like went home. He just was like nauseated and was like, had like inner pain. And he went back to the doctor and they said he had pneumonia, and then he had bilateral pneumonia, and then they finally like got a test back very late that said that he had a MRSA staph infection, and we have no idea how he got it or like why. By the time they figured out that's what it was too late to like put him on the right meds. He'd been on antibiotics that like weren't, MRSA is obviously like a methicillin resistant staph infection. So you need to be on a specific type of antibiotic. And by the time they caught it, it was just like, it had just like spread and he went septic. And it was like, weirdly enough, they put him on a ventilator. They put him into a coma so that he could like get oxygen. He was on a ventilator and then he went septic and his organs failed. And weirdly, it's like a lot of the stories I'm hearing about people who are dying from COVID. It's like, it sounds like a very similar final like few days, which has been like, it's weird going through something and being like, wow, I can like actually picture like what that experience is like. And the fact that people are going through it alone is like so devastating. Bigger conversation, but that's what happened to him. And it was about a week. We like sat vigil in the hospital for 3 or 4 days and then that was it.
So he was like on death's door for a week, or it was a week from when he started complaining of backaches until...
It was like a week from when he started complaining. I think like I went home...
So that's so fast, right?
It was really fast. Yeah, it was so freaky. I mean, I thank God it was fast. I think it would have been way worse if it was super drawn out, but it obviously felt like the longest week of my whole life. And I think we went and we did like a hospital vigil where like everybody we knew was like sitting in a waiting room waiting for like 3 days. We like slept at the hospital. And
where are we talking about? Where are you?
In Princeton, New Jersey, where I'm from.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was like super healthy. He was 49, young, like healthy, worked out all the time, ate a lot of glazed donuts.
Okay.
But, you know, we can't judge.
That's like the thing maybe we're pinning it on. Maybe it was the glazed donuts.
The glazed donuts. It's so weird. Like, so after he died, like, we had to go, like, clean out his office. And I don't remember who did it because, like, my mom and my sister and I just were, like, I don't know, drugged out at home, like, taking Xanax and stuff. But somebody went and cleaned out his office and found a tub of, oh, my God, not baklava, halva. A tub of halva. Like, have you ever had halva?
I have. This is like, it's like a Jewish pastry of some kind.
It's like, yeah, it's like,
I am Jewish. I should know, but this is a Jewish thing, is it not?
I think so. Yeah. Or like Eastern European or something, but it's like a nougat type thing, but it's something that you want to eat in little bites. And he had a huge tub of it in his desk drawer in his office. And it's like, it's so funny thinking about like when people die and people are like, God, how did that hit a healthy person? Like, were there underlying health concerns? And it's like, no, he was extremely healthy. Did he have a bucket of halva in his desk drawer? Yes.
Yeah, that's like, oh, that's so funny to be like, to imagine the things that if I died, I would want no one to ever find out about me. And your dad's was like, just please don't let them find the halva in the desk.
Exactly. Right, because like I think about that all the time because I'm like, well, someone's going to like go through all my stuff and they're going to open all my notebooks and they're going to be like, oh my God, her handwriting. And they're going to be like, wait, she wrote like the dumbest shit.
Yeah, exactly. Where did your dad work?
He worked in reinsurance.
I don't know what that is.
Reinsurers insure insurance companies.
Say one more time.
So reinsurers insure insurance companies.
Gotcha. So like,
because,
okay, you go. You should explain it because I have no idea.
So, okay. I had like, we used to have to go, you know, when there was like take your kid to work day and like everyone would be like, my dad's a doctor and we got to wear scrubs and play with the stethoscope. And I was like, I sat in an hour long lecture where they like showed us a slideshow about like what reinsurance is.
Whee!
And we were like, we don't get it. And then we were sent home. But it's basically like, you know, if there's like a catastrophic loss, like a hurricane where a company gets a huge payout from their insurance company, that's like millions and millions of dollars, like that money, like the insurance company gets that money from somewhere. So they have their own insurance policies from reinsurers.
And do the reinsurance companies have three insurance behind them to take care?
I assume. And I'm probably describing this completely wrong, but that's that's my understanding of how reinsurance works.
Okay, it seems totally plausible to me.
Yeah.
So when you said it was a week basically from when your dad started feeling unwell.
Yeah.
Until he died. Like, do you remember, like, it was a while ago. I mean, you're obviously incredibly young, but you said it did happen in college.
Yeah.
Do you remember like specific moments along that train, or does it feel like one like toboggan shot from he was sick to he died?
It's like, it's both. Thank you for saying I'm so young. Yeah, I was 19 when it happened and now I'm...
19 and a half.
19 and a half, so it was really recent. but I'm doing okay. I graduate soon. but it's weird. I feel like, well, first of all, like, it's so funny because obviously, like, you have also experienced some great loss.
Yes, I have. Indeed.
If you hadn't, it would be psychotic that you would be hosting this podcast.
Just the thing I like hearing. Nothing bad's ever happened to me, but I would like to hear people who have it worse off.
Just collecting sad stories for my little collection.
I just see it in the chat now, by the way, that like in a previous, like we should have checked in this here long ago. The snack is sesame seeds and tahini-esque. That's our producer chatting it to us.
Oh, did Sabrina? Okay, I was going to say while we were discussing that, I was like, Sabrina would obviously know what halva is because she's
Sabrina, our producer, who is, I mean, just amazing in many ways. Okay, anyway.
She's amazing and she's a halva expert.
She's a halva expert. Yeah, she lives in a bag of halva.
Tahini, sesame seeds. Okay, I'm going to leave this chat open now in case I have another pressing food question.
Jewish snack question?
Yeah, which I will, I'll have many.
We were talking about your dad. So,
right. It's so funny because I feel like having gone through something like that, when people, like when I find out that someone's parent died, I'm way more likely to be like, oh, what happened? Whereas people who have never lost anyone, I find are way more like, they will never ask about it, or like they won't ask for specifics.
Yeah.
And all that to say that like, I weirdly haven't told the story very often because people don't ask that much. They think that you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm trying to think of who I was talking about this with recently, but it's like, they don't want to remind you of it somehow.
Right.
I feel like, and there's a part of me that's like, bruh, I'm sort of never not thinking about it. Like, I definitely remember that my son died. It's not.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that. I don't feel like anybody's obligated.
You're not like jogging my memory.
Exactly. No one's obligated to ask me anything. And I feel like everybody's been super nice. It's not like anyone has been mean ever.
Right.
And I think it all comes from a good place. But definitely it's like, there's almost never a second question. It's always like, oh my gosh, you know, whatever. And then hot transition to, so does anybody like want appetizers or?
Anyway, like, right. People are like, people feel like they stepped on a landmine. They're suddenly like, oh, I have to like very slowly back away from this. Like,
yeah. Meanwhile, you're like, no, it exploded.
Whoops, it already exploded.
It exploded. You cannot back away.
I know. And I totally get that impulse. And it's actually, it's fine with me, but it is funny. Like when I think about what I do and don't remember, it's like there are tons of things I don't remember, and there are a lot of things that I would have to think back at right now because I haven't told the story that often, and it's not like something that I don't remember like constantly having to go through the steps of it out loud.
Yeah, I also feel like it probably happened at a time before you were like constantly making content, you know, we're like, because I feel like,
yes,
as a comedian now, huge brag, everything that happens, I'm like, okay, well, what, how could I express this in a way that is humorous? You know what,
yes,
I mean?
I know. I really do think about that. Like, I had Facebook, but this was 2008 and Facebook was it. And like, I didn't put out an announcement. I didn't like, the people who knew, knew. And I think about now how like, I would have to make like a fucking like Instagram post being like, as many of you know, like, I love, like, my dad is my parent. And like,
my dad is like, my parent. Good.
What do you even say? It's so like, it's such a weird thing to have to like put into words. And I probably would feel like I had to talk about it.
Yeah.
But now I'm ready to make content.
Good. Yeah, good. So what do you remember, like, when he, how did you know that he was, like, what do you remember about the backache specifically? Like, do you remember him, like, it must have been super bad.
So, yeah, I mean, my dad had a bad back, always. And he had a really high tolerance for pain. And I think he, like, suffered silently for many, many years just because he was, like, a very typical, like, man with a bad back. Probably because he had, like, lifted too many boxes when he was in his 20s.
I guess you forget that man with bad back is a full, that's a total and complete genre of man.
It is. It is. And he was, like, very, very much in that genre. And he also had, like, I think it's called stenosis. I don't know. He had had some, like, he had back surgery. Like, he had a bad back. So for him, it was like, he was not one to complain. So I think by the time he was complaining about pain, it was like, okay, well, that must be pretty bad because he like always had back pain that he didn't talk about. But I had like just, it was the very beginning of my sophomore year of college at NYU and I had just moved into my dorm. He had come and like helped me hang some things up. He had like brought a power drill, I think, and had like maybe drilled something.
Classic dad.
Classic. And then a few days later, he didn't feel well. And then, but I was like, it was like first week back at school. So I was getting, I talked to my parents like every day on the phone. Like I talked to them constantly, but like, you know, they were trying to be, it wasn't like I was home and like super aware of everything that was happening and every time.
Right.
And then at some point my mom was like, he has pneumonia. And I was like, oh, that's a little bit scary. And then my friends at school were like, all of our dads have had pneumonia. It's NBD. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. And then my parents' wedding anniversary was the following weekend. And I was going to go home for their wedding anniversary. And my mom ended up calling me and was like, he has, I can't, God. I think she was like, I remember the last conversation I talked to him was about toilet paper.
Uh-huh.
Which is so weird, but I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember like it was something about toilet paper, something about not having good enough toilet paper. I don't know. It was something about like 2-ply versus 3-ply.
I feel like that's that.
It was some stupid conversation.
I feel like that's so common for like last conversations like that when you don't know it's going to be the last one.
Yeah, right. And then my mom had called and said like, I think you should come home because they're putting him on a ventilator. And I was going home for their anniversary anyway. And so I went home early. I brought like, you know, 2 changes of clothes. And then he died on my parents' wedding anniversary, which was...
That's the most dramatic day to die. Like, really, that's...
I know.
That's intense.
I know. It was so shitty and rude, really.
Selfish.
And then a friend from college had to like... God, there are so many things that I really haven't thought of in so long. Like... A friend from college took the train to Princeton and had packed a suitcase full of my stuff because I had nothing with me. And I was a theater major. And for some reason, she threw my black character shoes in my suitcase. Like in case I was going to like go to like an open call for Anything Goes or something.
Yeah, in case you had to go to like Straw Hats or whatever.
Yeah, if I was going to do my like summer stock audition. And I honestly think I took my character shoes out of my suitcase and put them in my childhood bedroom closet. And I think they're still there to this day. I don't think I ever brought them back to school with me.
So this, you said it happened like right when you went back to school. Is it, we're like in like October, like that time of year?
It was September. It was like I think a week. It was September 8th. So... I had been back for like a week, went home, was home for a week. He died. And then I think I stayed home for like maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And then I went back to school.
That's a crazy thing too about straight up death, like not just sadness, but when someone dies that it cancels everything.
Everything.
You know what I mean? That's like, oh, I had all this stuff going. And it's really one of the few things in your life that like, oh, when this happens, all that shit is done.
Yeah. everything seems stupid. I remember things from that week, and I like remember things from the hospital. Like, I remember like the moment they told us that he wasn't going to make it. Like, there are moments like that that are like, I don't know, like the moments that you go back to like late at night when you can't sleep, and suddenly you're like, ah, I'm suddenly remembering the moment that the doctor said my dad was going to die. Like, why is my brain doing this to me? But then there's like a whole maybe year after where I like went back to school where my memory is so hazy. It's like my life shut down for like 3 weeks, but then like my life shut down for like a year.
Right. I mean, the thing that I think about with my son all the time is, and I would imagine it would have been crazy to be in college if that had happened, is that the whole world just like keeps going.
Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. You're like, wait, you're like working on your 16 bars. My freaking dad died.
Right.
Like, stop. Everybody, would you all stop for like 10 minutes?
Yeah. Like, do you feel like you would go outside and like the sun was shining and you're like, the fuck did the sun get here? Like,
yeah. Well, fuck like, you.
Fuck you.
I do remember very specifically going out to dinner with my wife and my dad, like maybe the 2 days after our son had died, and being in a restaurant, and my dad went up to go to the bathroom, and the table next to us was just like laughing their asses off about, you know, something. And I just remember looking at them and being like, could you not? Like, just like right now, could you be sad? And then looking at my wife and saying, we're the only ones.
Right.
Like, it's we're the only people.
Yeah, that's exactly the feeling.
And like the whole, everything else is still happening around us. And it is like, the more that I talk about this now, the more that I'm aware that that was wrong. They're like in that restaurant, like even the people laughing next to us, it very well could have been like, you know, their fucking brother just got chopped up by a helicopter blade. And they're like, can you believe the guy? I mean, what are the chances?
Crazy.
It's crazy.
I know. It does make you realize that like, it makes you realize that everybody's dealing with shit and you don't know.
Yeah.
And it also makes you a really aware of like very trivial problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it was a combination of being like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, especially going back to college, which is like the dumbest age that you can possibly be, where people are just worried about like the absolute dumbest things, especially when you're a theater major.
Yeah.
And I was like, I simultaneously was like, you have to stop being worried about that because there are so much worse things that could happen to you at any moment. And being like, I went through trauma and I'm allowed to worry about trivial shit and it feels good to worry about trivial shit.
Yeah.
So your brain is really playing tricks on you.
I think that's, I don't know if this is like an inside baseball comment to make, but I also think that that's part of your brilliance as a comedian is like how you approach things, how you like poke fun at people who are making like these huge issues out of something that's not that significant.
Oh my god thank you
there's a segment that I've seen on Fallon that I think I know you worked on, and if you didn't, we'll just cut this part straight out of the show.
Okay, great, lay it on me.
But do you write that out of the business bit? Is that something that you worked on?
Yes, that's me and Nate Dern,
who is one of my close personal friends, whom I love.
Yes, he's the best. He's my office mate. We don't have windows.
Oh, delightful.
And we have like the absolute worst office in the building. It has a giant, have you been in there? It has like a giant pillar in the middle of it. And we like sit around this pillar with no windows. And it's like the kind of office where everyone who has ever come to visit me at work is like, oh, show me your office. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
But Nate and I sit in there and come up with just the most brilliant ideas.
Everything is gold. I watched that bit before we did this podcast just to remember how funny it was.
Oh, thank you.
For those people who haven't seen it, and you got to go look it up. The idea basically is that the guests come out a little bit early and are so ashamed of having done it that they then think that they're completely blacklisted, like in entertainment forever, and they sing a song.
Yeah, they're like, hey, Jimmy, it's me, Gwen Stefani, and is it my time to come out? And Jimmy's like, no, it's not time to come out. And then Gwen Stefani's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'll just leave. And then she's about to leave and a spotlight hits her and she's like, I'm out of the business. And she sings this like very dramatic song. Gwen Stefani.
It's very funny.
She's very funny in that.
But I do think that having suffered the bottomlessness,
mm-hmm.
I do think stuff like that like maybe like it might, I'm sure it's funny to most people who see it, but I wonder if there's like an extra layer of how funny it is to me, because I am aware in a way that many people are of like how insignificant so much shit is.
Yeah, especially like in our, I mean, I think that we as a nation are experiencing this right now where we're like, oh, there are people that are very essential to us living our lives and keeping us alive and keeping society functioning. And then there are actors. And actors are actually proving that they're making the wrong turn at every at every possible turn. It's really something special. But I mean, like, I love comedy and I love acting and I love the biz.
Yeah, of course. Believe me, I love the biz.
But it's like, it's one of the more, it can feel very trivial. And I remember I had this like insane acting teacher who everybody loved, but he was like a real character and he was really old school. And he had lost his partner to AIDS in the 80s. And there was like one class that I had, I don't know if this happened to you, but like, I just kept bursting into tears in like the weirdest moments afterwards, like at a Lens Crafters.
Sure.
You know, which is how I got a friends and family discount.
Hot tip.
And at an acting class, and my teacher was like, you need to use this. He was like, you will get... I think he literally made me sit on his lap. I'm trying...
Oh, no.
Not in a gross way, but in like a come here, child. Like, I...
Still feels a little gross.
I'm definitely wrong about that. But like in my memory, he used to like walk with a cane and like wore a pocket square and was like, had a British accent, but like was from Queens. Like, but anyway, in my memory, he was like, come child, sit on my knee. But I don't think that's actually what happened. I think that's just my memory of the event. He was like, you will get past this. My husband died and I cried for 4 years. You will not cry for that long. You will use this to become a better artist. And it was like this, it was like very inspirational at the time, but in hindsight, it's just like, actually, we shouldn't need trauma to be better actors.
Yes, let's maybe not fetishize our grief so that we can exploit it for like a couple more tears on screen or whatever.
Exactly, so that I could like do a better scene from Night Mother or whatever.
Did you in any way perform at your father's funeral?
I did a skit. No. What?
I did a monologue from Brighton Beach Memoirs.
Oh my God. I did the scene from Rabbit Hole where she's folding her dead child's clothing. No. I did do a eulogy.
Okay.
Which was very well received.
Good. Yeah. I'm going to guess lots of crying, lots of laughing.
Oh my God. It had jokes. It had poignant pauses.
Ooh, yep. Beautiful.
Yeah. I did it and it was like so, I actually can't believe I did that, because I even at like my grandfather's funeral last year, they were like, do you want to speak? And I was like, I actually don't think I can. Like, I don't think I could get through that. And it's in hindsight really crazy to me that at like 19 years old, I got up in front of like 600 or however many people. It was a huge funeral. And I just was like, time for my monologue.
Wait, did you say 600 people?
I don't know. It was a lot of people. 200? 40?
That's a lot. Even if you're wrong by, still 300 is a lot. That's a lot of people.
Maybe 300, 20,000. It was at Yankee Stadium. It was a big funeral.
It was at Yankee Stadium. It was during a baseball game.
Yeah, they were like, let's just do both at once. It was a big funeral because it was like one of those things where like we didn't even belong to the synagogue, but it was like people from the synagogue came. It was a lot of looky-loos. It was a lot of people from his office, a lot of randos.
I don't know specifically what a looky-loo is, but you said it with intense disdain. Keska say looky-loo.
You know, like just people that are like, who died?
Is that a thing? People are just like...
Funeral crashers.
People just running around and going to funerals?
I think it's like, you know, people that... Like, I remember sort of being in the receiving line and being like, oh, I haven't seen this person since I was a child. Like,
right.
You know, people that aren't really in your life just come to be like, we're so sorry.
People who are like, your dad actually reinsured my insurance once.
Yes. People are surprisingly like, it's shocking how many people that you like never, like people came to like sit Shiva. People I knew very vaguely were like sobbing and being like, your dad meant so much to me. And I was like, literally, who are you?
Yeah. And you would be whom?
And what? Like, I don't know. Did you find that people just like popped out of the woodwork to be like condolences?
People did pop out of the woodwork, but it was never, or at least I don't remember that. I mean, no one was like, your son meant so much to me because he was 34 days old when he died. It would have been literally insane.
You've been like, get away from me.
For someone to be like, oh, I just love your son so much. It's like, you could not possibly have met him.
Nice try though, buddy.
Good one, pal. But we did, and we had a lot of people that we hadn't heard from in a while who like reached out to send their condolences, but nothing along that specific line.
I find that I like remember the people that really came out of nowhere to say something. I like remember every single one though. Like,
yeah.
Even there are people that I still am like, I never responded to that person and I still know that I didn't respond to them, but still means a lot to me that they reached out.
We had one of like my best childhood friends who I hadn't seen in like, you know, with any regularity for years, just suddenly started showing up at the hospital and would just be there.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a kid who I was friends with when I was like six. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And he and my dad are really close friends. So they stayed in. No, that's not true. My dad and his dad are really close friends. So they stayed in touch forever.
Yeah.
He just started showing up and like, you know, being like, hey, can I carry that for you? It was crazy.
Whoa. How long were you in the hospital?
So my kids were born, they're twins, right? They were born 32 weeks. So 34 days into Fisher, my younger son's life, that's when he died.
Wow.
And it was like during the pregnancy, there was a time we thought we were going to lose them both. They had this thing called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, which basically has 100% mortality if you don't treat it. And the way that they treated it was by cutting a hole in my wife and shooting lasers at her placenta.
Whoa.
Like the syndrome makes it so that one kid gets more nutrients than the other and it's bad for both of them.
Right.
So they try and like reallocate the nutrients. Anyway, we got that surgery. And then after the surgery, they were doing the check-ins and they're like, oh my gosh, everything's going great. They're doing really well.
Wow.
And so at 32 weeks, we were at the Children's Hospital Columbia. And whoever the doctor was that was monitoring us at that check-in was like, we're going to deliver these babies today. And they did. And they're both basically fine. Not like leave the hospital fine, but
right. We're
going to monitor them because they were born early. But we expect this to be okay. And then just like out of the blue, Fisher got crazy sick. And he had something called a volvulus, which is where your intestines twist.
Ugh.
And separate from the wall of your body.
Wow.
And then you die of sepsis. Your intestines rip open because it gets like clogged basically. And then all that actual shit like gets into your body. And then,
oh my God,
it's over. So I have obviously fewer memories of him than you would have of your dad. But
yeah. It
is like an insanely powerful time. And like the memories that you talk about where like you remember the doctor telling you when your dad was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of moments like that in the hospital where like I feel like if I close my eyes and you gave me a pen.
You could draw it.
I could draw it exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is definitely not true. Like I'm a horrendous artist, but that's how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, it would look like shit. I'd be like, here you go. This is exactly it.
This is exactly what happened.
They'd be like, wow, the doctor looks horrible.
Yeah. So all the people melted and one of them had dots as eyes.
And none of them had fingers. Yeah, that's exactly how I remember it. Yeah, no, totally.
You were saying that you remember that moment when the doctor told you, like, what is that moment in your mind? What do you remember?
Well, so the night before they had been like, this night's really crucial. Like, if he turns a corner, like he could turn a corner tonight, basically, and like be on the path to health and recovery. And then I was woken up at like 4 or 5 a.m. It could have literally been 8. I have no idea. There was no time.
Yeah.
It was super weird. There was like an empty wing of the hospital and they had set up like cots for us in there. So we were like sleep. It's so weird. We were sleeping in like an unused area of the hospital. And then we they woke us up really early and we went in and they were like, I can't remember. It's funny, like the moment, the feeling of the moment is so vibrant, but the like the exact words, I don't really remember. I think the doctor was like, he's not like, there's nothing we can do kind of thing. And then I was like, it like, I think slowly hit us all like, oh, like he's not going to die or he's not going to live. Like, I think my, I brag, was with my high school boyfriend.
Okay. Wait, were you, had you stayed together through college or he like showed up?
No, he just showed up to further traumatize me. No, we had stayed together through through the end of sophomore year. And it's so crazy because he was like keeping me company in the hospital and then was like there when my dad died, like in the room. And it's, I think about him all the time because like, you know, we see each other maybe once every 5 years through like old high school friends. We don't keep in touch. It was a lifetime ago. But like this poor man had to like watch my dad die. And like now that's his memory too. Like what an insane thing to be burdened with. But I just remember like the doctor started talking and I turned to him and I was like, this isn't good. And then the doctor was like, he's going to die. And then my mom and my sister and I like threw ourselves at him like we were in like a movie.
Threw yourselves at?
At my dad, like on this bed. He like looked like shit, you know, because like people who are dying just like look bad.
Yeah.
And he didn't like really look like himself. It's, you know, he just looked bad and not like himself. And we were like, we like threw ourselves at him and we're like crying and screaming. And I felt like it was sort of out of body where I was like, I can't believe that I'm the person behaving like this.
Oh my gosh. I know that feeling so well.
Isn't that weird?
The time that that happened to me was, so like Fisher got crazy sick and then Truman's my other son. We checked in on, I was like, where, like we hadn't been paying attention to him at all. And I was like, someone just check on Truman and see how he's doing. He also got sick.
Oh no.
Not the same level of sickness, but another really bad illness in the hospital. And I remember going in that room and like where he was, and I think Fisher had already died at this point. And the doctor was like giving us an update. And I remember for the first time, like I just I fell on the ground. I just like fell down.
Yes. I fell onto the ground.
And I was hugging my, I know that I'm getting this memory wrong.
Yeah.
But I think what happened was I was hugging my dad's leg as I was on the ground and I looked up and it was the doctor and not my dad.
That's like a mistake you make when you're like, you know, 5 years old and you like tug on your mom at like a store and then you realize that it's a stranger.
Yes, exactly. And there are so many things like that too. Like the reason I doubt my own memory of that is I was just talking to my sister about my dad being there when my son died. And she had a totally different version of the, like she was there too. And she was like, no, it wasn't like that. It was like this other thing.
Wow.
And she's probably right. Cause I was like way, way gone.
Right. Yeah. It's so weird. Like, and it makes like, I feel like now when I watch like movies and stuff about grief, like you always can tell when somebody like either really did their homework or has experienced it.
Yeah.
Because you're like, that's not how that happens. Like,
right.
Which is like every movie, but it's so interesting because that's something that is dealt with so much in movies and TV shows. Like, I feel like you really can't overact it. Like, I was like breathing into a paper bag. Like, a nurse literally brought like a paper bag for me to breathe into. I was like, I like lost my mind. And then the weirdest thing is you have to walk out of the hospital. Like,
yes.
You have to leave the building and like get in a car, which is like insane because when someone dies, you should be able to teleport to your bed. You shouldn't have to go anywhere.
That should be a feature that they have.
Yeah, they're like, we're so sorry. Like, beep, you're home.
We're so sorry. Beep.
Beep.
And you're out.
And you're gone.
Yeah, there should be, that's definitely something worth inventing, I feel.
I'm working on it.
I don't know if anybody from like a hospital is listening to this, but if you are, for sure get on teleporting.
I think that's season 2 of Devs.
Oh my gosh, gotta watch.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I wanted to ask you, are there any stories from that time that you remember besides what you've shared so far that were like funny? Like, did you laugh during that time at all?
For sure.
Do you remember those, like those moments?
Yeah, there were a few moments. There was, oh my God. I mean, the first like few days were like so shocking. I like couldn't, it's funny that you talked about falling to the floor because I remember getting home and laying down on the hardwoods in my living room because I felt like if I stood, the ground would like lift up and swallow me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
I wanted to like, I wanted every single point of my body to be resting on a solid surface or I would like float away. Like there was, it was this weird feeling of like not being able to ground myself. And so I wanted to like dig myself into a hole.
Yes.
So I was like laying on the floor and I sort of felt like that for like a few days. But like the weird thing about like, I don't know. I mean, you said your family's Jewish.
My dad's side is Jewish. My mom's side is Catholic, but I'm kind of like,
You're kind of like, whatever.
I'm not so much.
That's how I am. But
yeah, I'm like, hang 10, bros.
Yeah, I'm like, whatever you want. But like we sat Shiva and that is like the weirdest thing because then you're like experiencing this thing. But then it kind of puts off the grieving in a good way, like puts off the grieving process a bit because for like a week, you're just entertaining people.
Yeah.
And it's so unusual to have everybody you know coming in and out of your house that like you don't, it prolonged the amount of time it took to suddenly be alone and be like, oh, that happened.
Yeah.
And so there was a week of like everybody coming in and out and like sharing stories. And we were definitely like laughing about things. My aunt, my great aunt, bless her, sent us a card that was like a store-bought card that said shit happens.
The store-bought cards are the best.
Oh my God. And then
what did it say inside?
I think it had like a picture of a toilet or something. Like it was, I think we saved it, but this wasn't somebody that we were like so close with that we were like, oh, we always have a dark sense of humor. Like this was just an absolutely insane card to send. And like that really got us. But I don't know. I feel like there was definitely laughter, but it wasn't like, there wasn't a moment where I was like, and now we're laughing. Like,
and this is it, the funniest thing that ever happened.
Yeah, yeah. But there were definitely moments like, there were short moments like that that I guess weren't super memorable. Mostly I was just trying to lay on the ground so that I didn't float into outer space.
The idea of a shit happens card is so funny. Like the whole like, sorry for your loss section of the Hallmark card store.
Yeah.
It's always like, it's like all people have, you know what I mean? So I always appreciated everything that I was ever sent.
Of course.
But it's all like those like calligraphy and I don't know. But the other thing about them is I did find myself looking back on those things afterwards,
mm-hmm.
and being like, actually, this does kind of comfort me.
Yeah, it's comforting.
As much as I've made fun of this card for months,
yeah.
I'm looking at it now as I'm about to throw it out and being like, well, you know, in a way, we're all part of the fucking wind. I mean, it's true. We are. We're part of the wind.
We are. We are all the wind. We are all like trees in the forest.
We're all trees in the forest. Like, thank you for sending me this.
I know. A few people like went out of their way to write notes. And it's so interesting because that stuff, like, it just really sticks with you. Like, speaking of my award-winning eulogy, my dad was a, like I said, he did math and worked for reinsurance, which is very boring, but he was a musician and he had gone to school for music and was like this amazing musician, always played instruments.
So that obviously has a lot to do with your affinity for music now, yes?
Oh, yes. Like I grew up like singing while he played guitar and like.
So cute.
He played double bass and would like play the bass in my choir, and he was in the community orchestra for a couple years, and it was just a very like musical. He was very musical, and he was like, he was musical in a way where like in his 40s, he was like, I think I'm going to learn how to play the violin, and like bought a violin and drove like my family insane for months. But like was so excited to just like have this violin. And he like had gotten, he played classical guitar, but then like got into rock guitar and had bought like a really fancy Paul Reed Smith guitar. And he would like play hooky from work and jam on his guitar, like to the point where I had a friend who had been coming over a lot. And at one point he was like, does your dad like have a job?
That's so, that makes me want to meet your dad.
Yeah.
like that, like childlikeness, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
it's, I mean, I know that people, I just find that so endearing when adults, you feel that like the child inside of them being like, oh, I want to learn how to play the flute too.
Exactly. That's exactly what he was like. And I think that, I mean, obviously like he went to school for music and then ended up pursuing like something more stable and sensible, whereas I like kept doing the dumb thing. But I still have that instinct of like constantly picking up hobbies and being like, okay, I'm going to learn to weave. And the only way to do this is to invest in a really good loom. And
gonna have to get a loom.
Like I have to get a loom. That was very his thing. Like if he was going to do something, he was going to do it the right way. But in my eulogy, I had said like, you know, if there's one thing that I wish that people would like take from my dad's life, it's like, if you want to play the guitar, like go get a guitar, like learn an instrument, like just don't wait to do things. And somebody wrote a note from his office, this guy that I didn't know, a coworker, wrote a note to my mom and to my family and was like, I just want you to know that I like left the funeral and like went and bought a harmonica, or like, I think it was a harmonica, but like he literally had like gone and gotten one. And he was like, I just want you to know that like, I'm thinking about that, and like, I'm gonna do it.
Oof.
And so that was cool. And like, I will always remember that letter. Like it was so meaningful, and it probably, you know, it took him 5 minutes to like write a personal note.
And I think that is like one of the things that I think about a lot when I talk to people who have, you know, suffered stuff like this, is like, what good do you think came out of this person you love dying? And that is like one of those things, mm-hmm. where it's like your eulogy about who your father was inspires people to be more like your father. So in, not to be too weird about it or whatever, but like it puts more of your dad into the world than there ever was. You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, I think that's true. And I think that's why like when people choose not to talk about grief or like not to ask follow-up questions, like the thing that you lose is that like you don't get to talk about that person anymore, which can be hard.
Yeah. Like I had the reason I've even started doing this podcast is I had a conversation with someone who had lost her dad. And similar to what you're saying is that she was like, no one has ever asked me about this. Like, I think she like usually would say, my dad died and that's it. And then just to be like, what happened to your dad? And then she talked, you know, for like 45 minutes straight, and it was fascinating and moving and funny and all that stuff. And she was like, it wasn't until she got to the end of it where she was like, I don't think I ever talked about this.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, I feel like if anything, I've had the opposite. And again, like most people are well-meaning, but like I had somebody once be like, are your parents musical? And I was like, not really. I was like, my mom, not really. Like she is sort of musical, but not, it was never her thing. And then he was like, well, what about your dad? And I sort of jokingly was like, well, my dad's dead. And he was like, I hate when people do that.
He said that to you?
Yeah. And I was like, what? Tell you that their dad's dead.
Did he think that you were joking? Like you were playing a funny joke?
No, like I think he just felt like I was like calling him out for asking about a dead parent.
Gotcha.
Instead of doing what I was doing, which was like trying to be cute about something that was like.
Yeah.
Not fun to talk about. But I was like, it is my prerogative to joke about my dead dad.
Yeah, exactly. I own this. This is one of my very few intellectual properties.
I own this. Yes. Like, I think he didn't like that I was being so flippant about it, that I was like, well, my dad's dead. So like, no, he's not musical. He's fucking dead. Like,
yeah.
No, he's ashes, bitch. Like, but...
He's ashes, bitch.
He's in my mom's closet. My dad is in an urn in my mom's closet. And the joke in my family is that someday when my mom dies, I have to take her ashes and his ashes and dump them in a landfill somewhere.
Did you, what cremating him, was that like something that he wanted, or was that like your mom's idea, or?
No, that's something that he wanted. He had a will that was like absolutely insane, and like he had scribbled on in writing, and it had like crazy things, like he had willed his like cigar collection to his friend. Like, it was very impersonal because it was like the will of a man in his 40s who like didn't think he was gonna die, but he had put some thought into it, and the things that he had thought about were like so weird, like the cigars. But yeah, he wanted to be cremated.
Wow. Why do you think he wanted that?
I don't know. I feel like I'm actually not sure. I mean, I guess I get it. Like, the idea of being in the ground is kind of horrible. I mean, so is the idea of being burned. But
yeah,
I think that he probably thought it was like more like, I think he was one of those people who, if you could do one of those like burials where you get like put in a shroud and then turned into a tree, like he would have done that. Like, that it was more humane to the earth. I don't know. I'm making this up, but
I don't know. Totally full of shit right now.
Yeah. But they wouldn't let us have his funeral at the synagogue that my family had, that my sister and I had been raised at, because...
Because he was cremated?
Because he was cremated.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's not... you can't do, like, a Jewish burial if you've been cremated, but it's, like, the rabbi... It's at the discretion of the rabbi, because our synagogue was, like, conservative, but had a lot of Reform members as well. It was sort of mixed. And the rabbi was, like... no, we won't do it here. So we had to do it at like some random synagogue where we had never belonged.
Oh, so it's not every synagogue. It's like whatever level of Judaism they were at, they were like, you're below this level. You gotta.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, you can't bring your ashes here. Although it was a casket at the funeral. Like, he wasn't cremated yet. It just like he was going to be cremated. So they wouldn't let us.
Oh, wow. So even pre-cremation.
Yeah, pre-cremation. And so.
What we call pre-cre.
Pre-cre. And they wouldn't let us do it. And then that rabbi came to the shiva and my mom was like, that bitch. It was such a fun drama. That's the thing. Like, I remember being like, this drama's kind of fun.
I do kind of like this. Thanks, Dad.
I kind of like this drama. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you another question before I allow you to live the rest of your life without ever talking to me again.
I actually love talking about this, and I do want to talk about it for another 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, great. That's great, because that's how long... Well, usually what we do is you and I would stop talking at an hour, and then just it's silence for 3.5 hours.
Oh,
and then
great.
I do a fart sound, and the podcast ends.
Is it like a...
Yes, it's a very okay. Polite... It's like a polite question from my butt.
From my butt.
The question I wanted to ask you is, where can I ask you what your dad's name is? This is not the question.
Russell.
Russ.
What if I didn't know?
Oof, tough one. I think it was dad.
It was dad, and it was also daddy sometimes.
Where do you think? Like, do you think of your dad, of Russell, being someplace now? Is there a place where that person exists to you?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I feel like I don't believe in heaven. I do believe in hell. I don't know. I never believed in this before.
Yeah.
And now I fully believe that, like, there is, like, your energy goes somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And after he died, my mom and I kept happening where we were like, he's watching, in a way that, like, every time I've tried to explain it to someone, sounds absolutely insane. But I don't think he's like in a place like chilling.
Right.
But I like think that there's something. Cause like weird stuff kept happening. Weird stuff kept happening
uh-huh.
right after where I was like, that's a ghost.
So right after your dad died, there would be things that happened in the world that you would be like, I think that might be like what, like your dad communicating with you in some way or?
Sort of. Yeah. Like the weirdest thing that happened, this is like where I start telling ghost stories.
I can't wait.
It was the middle of the night. He was sitting on my bed, staring at me in a Victorian gown.
Yikes, a gown? What a choice.
Yeah, weird. So the weirdest thing that happened was, I guess like a few days after, nobody came in or out of the garage because no one was taking the cars out of the garage. And there was one night where I was with my mom and my sister and there weren't like other people in the house and the garage door opened and it was my dad's friend who I guess like had the code to the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And I like burst out in tears because it was so like the sound of my dad coming home.
Right.
Like it was just like for one moment I had this feeling of like, oh, this is what it would sound like if my dad just came home and wasn't dead and just like came through the door. Wait, sorry, I'm plugging in my computer.
You got to get that little extra juice.
You absolutely. Sometimes you simply must.
You just gotta. Yeah, I definitely had that after my son died of things of like, it was not like what you're describing where I thought there was any kind of communication. It was more like, I was holding a place for him and everything. So I would like find a place to parallel park and I'd be like, thanks, bud. I owe you one.
That's it. Oh, yeah, of course. Parallel parking is a big one.
That's a big one. Yeah. Dead people are always in the afterlife. They're like, okay, well.
Yeah. That's like what you do. If there's a spot right outside of a store where you're going, that's a dead person.
Yeah.
Okay. So the end of the story, now that I have my computer plugged back in. So I burst into tears because I was like, that's the sound of my dad coming home. And I guess like my brain went through this quick moment of being like, oh, right now, like he could walk in and be like, hey, girls, and like everything would be fine. Remembered that it wasn't. His friend came walking in and I was like, imposter. But literally the next day, the garage door on his side of the garage like bay just completely broke and stopped working and no one could get it open. And that was the kind of thing that my mom and my sister and I were like, dad did that.
Yeah.
He did that for us. But then it's like you start to put meaning onto everything that happens, I find.
Totally. Every song that gets played, you're like, yes.
This is it. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Macarena, of course. Of course, he would have loved that.
You're like, my son, really? This, like, he would have loved this song. It would have been his favorite song.
Yeah, Mambo number 5. He would have, when he turned 5, he would have said, play this on my birthday.
I really, like, I don't know. I guess it's like your brain is trying to ascribe meaning to things, but also I think that ghosts are real.
So there's that.
So come and fight me.
Yeah, I think I think for myself, I feel like he's just gone. Like that is really like what I feel and believe.
Yeah.
But I also, I'm open to the idea that I'm just wrong about that. And that like,
yeah,
he's up there in heaven someplace downloading this podcast being like, I don't know, that's not how I remember it or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, ooh, dodged a bullet. Like, I get to hang up here where it's cool as hell.
Yeah, exactly. No COVID up here, bitches.
I know. I mean, more or less, I think, like, he's gone. I feel like the instinct for people, especially, like, religious people, to be like, this happens for a reason, and, like, God needed an angel or whatever, which isn't really something that Jews say, but hit they could. like, is not calming to me and not helpful. And I don't really think things happen for a reason. I think things just happen that are bad and you have to deal with them. And maybe many years later, you can put a reason on them. Like, I can say that, like, losing my dad, like, made my sophomore year go a certain way and then, you know, made me hang out with one person and not another person. And then that led to my junior year happening a certain way. And then that's why I met my husband, and I wouldn't have met him if things had gone differently. But I think that that's also just like fake.
Yeah, I also feel like so many of the reasons that things, quote unquote, happen for are like whatever you decide. You know what I mean? Like, yes, they happen for a reason because I'm going to pick a reason and I'm going to, you know, do something with that.
Exactly. But I think that a lot of people need that. They need that to justify why bad things have happened to them.
Yes, exactly. Like there's some plan up there.
Exactly.
Are there moments still, like, do you remember the last time that you were like, not to be dramatic, but like were like brought to your knees remembering something about your dad? Like, have you had like any of those moments recently?
The last time I like fell to the floor weeping.
Yeah. Or just like, I mean, probably less falling to the floor nowadays, but even just like something that reminded you of your dad in the way that busted you up a little bit.
For sure. I feel like it's pretty rare that something happens where I'm like, God, I really wish I could tell him about that.
Right.
But there are things like that. I mean, my dad, it's like, oh my God, it's 7 o'clock and everybody in my neighborhood is applauding for healthcare workers. Can you hear it?
My wife is a nurse, so we do a clap. We're just going to clap for her.
Oh my God.
Yes. I'll play this back for her, this part.
Please do. Everyone is like out on like banging cowbells and stuff. And it's like, where did you get these cowbells?
Why do you have a cowbell?
Why do you have that? I'm going to assume it's a real cowbell and not pots and pans. Anyway, apologies. I love how I was like, I can do it in my living room because my living room is actually pretty quiet. And then come 7 p.m., it's like,
Yeah, a symphony of pans.
A full symphony. It's so weird. When my dad died, I was considering transferring schools. I was considering, or like, you know, not deep into considering because it was the beginning of the year, but like I was deeply unhappy as a theater major. I thought maybe I wanted to do something else entirely. I wasn't sure I wanted to be an actor. I hadn't started doing comedy. I was 19. Like, I hadn't met my husband. Like, there are so many things that he's missed. And I feel like the thing that will bring me back to him is just like thinking about like, I'll have these moments where I'm like, oh, well, he got to see me do that thing. And then it's like, oh, no, he didn't. Obviously not. Like,
right.
The time just bends in a weird way where you sort of lose track of like the order of events. And like I felt really sad at my wedding,
right?
Because he wasn't there, but it also like wasn't something that took over my wedding. I wasn't like sad the whole night. I think there was like one moment where I like ran into my mom in the bathroom and I was like, Daddy's not here. And we like had a moment and then it was like, okay, back to doing like shots or whatever.
Your wedding was all body shots.
It was all body. Yeah, it was all body shots and only off of my body.
Did you have to do like, there's normally like a father-daughter dance is a pretty normal thing at a wedding. Did you have to have some kind of like hip alternative to that?
A hip. Yeah, I hired a stripper. I danced with my, wait, David, did I dance with my mom at our wedding?
Oh, I don't know.
I literally can't remember.
Did he also say, I don't know?
He said, oh, I don't know.
Like,
did we do a dance?
I don't think we did a dance with anyone other than you.
Okay, he's right.
What'd he say? We couldn't hear him.
He said that, I think that we did a dance. We did a first dance, and then I think we just didn't do any other dances.
Gotcha.
But my mom walked me down the aisle.
Got it.
And when we walked into the room, I sobbed walking down the aisle.
Yeah.
And that definitely was part of it. And it wasn't that I was, like, noticing, like, my dad's not here, but I think it was very, like, oh, I'm with my mom. It's very vulnerable right now that I, like, don't have that. Everyone can see that he's not here. And everyone I know and love is staring at me. And I just like wept down the aisle. And like, I haven't really been to weddings where people did that.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen other friends weep down the aisle. So I think that had something to do with it.
Yeah. I think you also get you usually get a light cry going down the aisle. I think a light cry is pretty normal, either from bride or groom, but a full sob is unusual.
Yes. The photos of me walking down the aisle are so crazy because I'm like laugh sobbing because I'm aware of like how insane it is. And afterwards, people were like, were you hysterically laughing? And I was like, no, I was weeping. But I've never been super traditional about stuff like that. And I wasn't someone that was like, my dad won't be able to walk me down the aisle. Like I hadn't really thought to be upset about it. And then as it happened, it was like so emotional. And it had been almost a decade since it had happened. Like those things just continue to hit you forever, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, at least for me, it appears to be an ongoing sort of never ending process that like you don't really move on from in the way that I think of moving on, you know?
Yeah, you more like learn to live with.
Yeah, move through.
You move through. And it's so funny because I remember like I did a couple things in the like weeks after, which are so weird. It's so weird that this was my... Oh my God, did you hear that bell?
I do hear it.
Can I say something that's going to make you so jealous and everyone jealous? I have a guy wearing a gas mask delivering me chicken parm right now. He's wearing a full gas mask. He looks like he's like running into the apocalypse and he's bringing me chicken parm. Okay, we love it. Anyway, that was my chicken parm. So I did a couple things in the weeks. This is the weirdest fucking time. In the weeks after that were so weird, but they were what felt right at the time. One of them is that I started a notebook where I wrote down every memory because I was like worried I would forget them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I have to write everything down. And so I have these like crazy notebooks that are like the time we went to the mall and he said this and I said, like, they aren't like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know what I thought like getting older was like, but it's like, obviously I remember things like,
yeah.
And you have a finite amount of memories with a person who dies young. So it's not like, obviously I remember him. So it was very funny that I did that, but I did do that. So I have this like crazy book of memories. And the other thing is that I kept like repeating dad's dead in my head over and over again. I kept thinking like, dad's dead. Your dad died. He's dead. And he's dead because I was worried that I would forget for a second and then remember again and then like be traumatized again.
Yeah, totally.
And it's such a weird thing to do because it's like you said, like it never goes away. Like you never forget. Like there's never a moment where you're like, oh my God, I just remember like this terrible thing happens to me. Like it just becomes a part of the fabric of what makes you you. And the fact that I ever was like, what if I forget? is so funny. But again.
But I totally, there is that instinct to be like, let me just write this down.
Yeah.
Cause like that makes it real. I think also that thing of like, dad's dead makes me think of a thing you said earlier when you like when the doctor came in and you knew they were telling you that your dad was going to die and you were like, this isn't good.
Yeah.
There's like that. Like language becomes, I think, in like the most severe moment, there's only like, you only know 10 words and you're like, I have no other way to describe this besides this isn't good.
Yes. Yeah. You're like, is bad. Thing is bad.
Yeah. I'm a highly articulate person, but I know now I know what the words not good were meant for. They're meant for this moment.
Yes, exactly. It's like the ultimate, this is not good that you could possibly experience.
We had that same thing with my son where we got the call from the hospital to come in and my wife's mother was staying with us and she like looked, my wife told her what was happening and she looked at her and was like, that's the bad thing. And you were like, that's the most true statement that could ever be said.
Yeah, that's the bad thing.
It's like, yes, this is the bad thing. It's it that's happening now. And like all the other times that we said bad before this were all wrong. None of those were right about what's bad. This is what's bad.
Right. Yeah, you're like, this is the bad thing. And then the rest of your life, you're like holding everything else up against that bad thing.
Yeah. And also like, so is everybody around you. Everybody's like,
right,
like crying about some shit. And you're like, what's up? And they're like, I can't tell you. Like, you have real shit. And it's like, no, it's okay. And then they're like,
yeah,
they sent me Crocs in the wrong color. And you're like, okay, well, all right. Yeah, maybe you could have kept that one in.
Oh, man, that's so true. I like like junior year, my roommate was having this crazy boot thing happen where she kept ordering boots and they kept coming in the wrong size. And it was like the bane of her existence. She was talking about it so much. And I was like, I literally cannot be bothered to care about your boots.
I won't care about this. I'm so sorry.
I won't care. But it, and it does like, and it's like, you want to be sensitive to other people. And for the most part, I am like, please tell me whatever problem, but you have, but occasionally, like, even now people will be like, I don't know, it puts you in this weird place where like people will lose a grandparent or something and be like, sorry, I'm just like really floored. Like, this is really like taking me out of everything. I need to like mourn my grandparent or something. And I'm like, he was 100 years old.
Yeah. It's like he was trying to die at his age. He's glad to be dead.
Right. I don't know. And like, maybe that's really dark and horrible of me, but it is like, I feel like you start putting things in perspective. And even like my grandfather died a year after my dad died. And I remember thinking like, well, he had a good life. Like, this is okay. People are supposed to die in their late 80s. You know, would we like more time? Yes. But like, until you've lost somebody who's like really not supposed to die, I feel like you don't totally understand what that feels like.
Yeah. I think there's like an inflection point where, and that inflection point is whatever age you are, where like,
yeah,
the farther in the future from that age, someone like, you know, someone 30 years older than you, when they die, you're like, well, I mean, that's, and then 50 years older is something else.
That's old. Yeah.
The first time someone who's your age dies, you're like, wait, that doesn't sound right. I don't think this is correct.
You're like, that's not supposed to happen. Yeah, this feels wrong. I know, even, I was just saying this the other day that like, even at the time I remember being like, well, I'm an adult and this does happen. Adults lose their parents. And now I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I was so young. Like, I guess because I was in college, I was like, well, I'm a grown up and so I can deal with this. But now I'm like, oh, I was a teenager.
Right.
And now when people who are my age, like in their 30s, lose a parent, I'm like, you lucky bitch. Like,
exactly.
It's like they're going through something horrible and I feel for them, but it's like, man, I would have loved to have another like 11 years with my dad, and like I would have loved to lose him in my 30s.
Yeah. What a privilege.
How great would have that been? What a privilege. It's such a psychotic way of thinking.
Yeah, but it's real, man.
It's real.
Rachel, this has been so great. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. I'm glad you're doing this. I hope that you don't have to now relive your trauma like weekly for people like me who are like, and what about you?
Thank you. I mean, I don't feel that way. I feel at least, I mean, I've only done it this time so far, but I like talking about it. It makes me feel good, which is maybe perverse, but it feels good to talk about it.
That's good. Yeah, no, I feel that 100%. Like I said, like, I wish that people would be nosier. I wish that people would be like, oh, tell me everything.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Tell me what a dead body looks like.
Yeah, what does it smell like when someone dies?
You're like, not good.
Yeah, you already know that one, actually. It smells bad.
It's bad. I know. A lot of people have not had to deal with death at all. And they're very lucky. I hope they never have to. I hope no one they know ever dies.
I think that is, I mean, obviously that's true. But I do also think, and not that I wouldn't trade whatever I've learned for my son to not have died, but I do think it's like, I didn't know what it was, like really on like the deepest level, to be a human being until somebody that I really loved was dead.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, light, this is part of it. Like, you're going to have a certain amount of time and you won't have any more.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't real to me until that happened. And again, that's not worth the trade, but it's something that I got from it that, like, I know what being alive is now. I didn't know before.
Right. Yes. And that is the meaning that I think you can ascribe. Am I using the word ascribe correctly? Ascribe?
I think so.
What if the podcast just ends there at me?
That's it. That was Rachel. Go home and Google the definition of ascribe, friends.
I think that is the correct meaning to ascribe to a loss, is not the like, well, it's everything happens for a reason. Like, I never would have, you know, gotten my job like writing skits or whatever if it hadn't been for this.
Right. I wouldn't have started that Instagram account for my cat.
Exactly. But I do think that like, to be able to look back and say like, okay, for better or for worse, like that's the moment where I realized that we only have a little bit of time here and with the people that we care about. Lucky me to have learned that.
Yeah.
because a lot of people don't.
Yeah, like you learned that at 19 and now you know. You've known since then.
Yeah, and now like I live every day like it could be my last. I get up in the morning. I play 12 hours of Animal Crossing. I carry around a book all day that I will never read.
I can't read. I don't know how.
I don't know how. And that's what you, when you know, when you have lost, you know that every day is a gift that you must spend watching Grey's Anatomy.
So true. You're the absolute embodiment of that. Rachel, thank you so much. Guys, give it up one more time for Rachel Winitsky, wherever you are.
Wow.
I'm sure you're clapping for Rachel.
And give it up again for our healthcare workers.
Yes, of course.
For your wife.
And for the essential man who showed up with the chicken parm, fully decked out in a hazmat suit.
That's the most humiliating thing that could have happened to me during this.
That he had to like ride here in a fire truck to bring you the chicken parm?
Yeah, the siren came from like a mile away so that he could like put chicken parm on my front step.
That was episode one. What?
I was just saying I love chicken parm.
Okay, good. Yeah, good. We'll keep that in. That was episode one, and I love you. Bye. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
Beans, 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 beans. It's beans time.
That was a HeadGum podcast.